Okay, what's going on?
AudioToYou.com.
The home of quality podcasts.
Stay tuned to this channel.
Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 161 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com. And with me, freshly out of bed on a Saturday morning, Mr. Shelton Muller. How are you?
How do you know I'm freshly out of bed?
Well, I was just thinking that I'm making an assumption.
Have you installed cameras? Have you installed cameras? Have you?
I was just thinking about your comments last week about you and Glenn having gone to bed in LA, but then clarifying the fact that you were in separate beds.
Yes, we were. Yes, absolutely.
Oh,
you know,
dear,
he's a good-looking man, but, you know, I'm sorry, I don't fly that way. You know? I'm not freshly out of bed. I've been out of bed for an hour and a quarter now.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah, something like that. Had to have a coffee, you know, put the dog out and all that kind of thing. He's an old dog, so I let him sleep in at night.
Right.
You know? And it's winter here, and it's damn cold in Melbourne.
Yep.
So you can't have a poor dog shivering under the house, can you?
Nope.
You know?
Nope.
So, no, I've been up for a little while. I'm all showered and shaved, and I feel fresh and good. As for you, however, I understand that you even haven't even had your first coffee yet.
I've just finished it while we were having our preamble before we recorded.
Fair enough. I have a wedding to photograph today, my friend.
Oh, fantastic.
Yep, which means, you know, none of this typical Bruce Williams ramble on, crap, giggle, giggle, as Mr. Hannibal says.
Right.
We should get stuck straight in, don't you think?
Okay, mate, go for it.
How's the weekend? Have you done any photography?
I haven't.
Nah.
I haven't this week. It's been a busy week. I finally got the car back from the smash repairers on Thursday night.
Uh-huh.
So it's been 4.5 weeks already.
Boy, are you happy with the job?
Look, it looks fantastic, and for the most part, the car feels okay, but there's just one or two little niggling things that are just not quite right, so I'm probably going to have to go back and say, oh, you know.
Yes.
Do it a bit better.
Well, you know, I won't say you should get it in the way you've given it. You should get it back in the way you gave it to them. That's not the whole concept. You should get it back to the condition it was before you got plowed into.
Exactly.
If that's at all possible.
Yeah.
And, you know, insurance companies, well, you know, keep hassling them till, you know, I mean, they'll do what they can to get out of an expense.
Yeah.
So, you know, unless they're a good insurance company, and I don't know too many of them, so, you know, they run business like everybody else, so they can curb an expense, they will. But, just remember, you pay, so you say.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Anyway, that's all I'm going to say on the matter. Same with photography, but, you know, you pay, you say. I say that to my wedding clients, you know, oh, do you mind if, you know, we do this or do that? Absolutely. You pay, you say.
Yeah.
If I can do it, I most certainly will.
Yeah,
you know, that's the way it was. That's the way it should be, and is in my case. Oh well, we've got some emails to read. Should we
do
off the link you sent me?
Yep.
What should we read? Phil Austin's first.
Go for it.
All right. Hi, Bruce and Shelton. First, the podcast is fantastic. Yes, thank you. We know that. No, I'm only kidding.
Thank you, Phil.
Humility dictates that I say that. I have learned so much in the past few weeks listening to the old podcasts. I live in Rockhampton. Oh, hello. Yeah, okay. How come you haven't been to my workshops then, Phil? Anyway, and I've had to travel a lot lately for my job, sometimes in the car for 8 hours in the day. That's a lot of podcasts. I'm not sure what people are talking about. There seems to be more great photography tips than crap, crap, giggle, giggle. Anyway, enough about you guys. I belong to the Rocky Photography Club, and I was lucky enough to attend the Friday night workshop, sorry, Phil, run by Shelton. Having never heard of the almost world-famous Shelton Muller, wasn't sure what to expect. I probably didn't learn as much as I could have because my skill levels were at the beginner end, but I was inspired to improve my non-existent skills anyway. As now my knowledge and skills have improved, Shelton's workshops would be of great benefit and would happily recommend them to anyone. Sometimes you guys talk about stuff like dynamic range, this will be my question this week, and don't explain what dynamic range is, and then you la 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 on about it. I know you have said in the past that we could listen to old podcasts, but there's a lot. Anyway, if you could explain about dynamic range, that would be great. Podcast tip. Bruce, if you change the background... Oh, no, yeah. We'll leave that bit. Do you want some credence as background?
There's a certain thing called copyright, Phil. No what can song? Do on the credence.
What song would it be? You know, I think for our podcast, would it be Run Through the Jungle? you know, Someday, Never Comes.
Looking out my back door.
yes. Well, shall we quickly discuss dynamic range or make it for another podcast, Bruce?
I'm happy to discuss it.
Let's discuss it. Very, very briefly, Phil. Dynamic range, if you haven't sort of had a bit of a look at or Googled it yet, is about a camera's ability to increase it, or the sensor's ability to contain detail in high light and shadows. And the greater that range is extended over, you know, more, say, stops of light, the more dynamic range a camera has. So, for instance, if you had something that was extremely contrasty, a very sunny day, a very bright, you know, sunny day, you would, if a camera had increased dynamic range in its sensor, have detail in the brightest parts of the image and in the darkest parts of the image. As sensors have improved over the years, the dynamic range in them has increased. You know, original sensors were not particularly good, and over the past, you know, 10-15 years, the dynamic range has increased almost to the point of you know, the negative film, which had, you know, about, I don't know, 7 stops or something like that, if I remember correctly, of dynamic range. So, you know, when we talk about increased dynamic range, we're talking essentially about a camera's ability to retain and capture detail in, you know, important areas like that. You can imagine, for instance, in a portrait, you know, if you've set up a studio portrait and you've got a little bit of a hot spot from one of the lights or something, how much detail will that contain? Will it just be a whited out skin, or, you know, will it have some skin texture? The dynamic range is usually contained in the raw file, although it does translate into the JPEG to some degree, but a JPEG is only 8-bit, whereas a raw file is somewhere between, depending on your camera, 12-bit to, you know, 14 or even 16-bit. So you have a lot more dynamic range in the raw file that's captured as against the JPEG. Hence the reason why photographers, professional photographers and serious enthusiasts prefer to photograph, capture their images in raw, and that gives them a lot more play if they need to, you know, alter exposure or alter the histogram in the raw file process. They don't lose information because there's so much more dynamic range and so much more information in the actual image. So I hope that helps. If you want to further discuss it, well, we can make some bullet points and go through it in another podcast. What do you reckon, Bruce?
Sounds good.
Have I covered it, or do you want to add some?
I think you've covered it. It's, yeah. I guess if someone had asked me the same question, I would say, you know, dynamic range is all about the range of luminosities within an image, from the darkest shadows to the brightest, you know, hot spots, as you called them. Mm-hmm. And the ability of whatever hardware is involved, whether it be an analog camera or a digital camera, to cope with that range of you know, values of luminosity. And as Shelton said, you know, that, you know, film only covered a certain number of f-stops, and when we look out there with our naked eyes, we see a much greater range than any of our technology has yet been able to capture. But it's getting better all the time. So
yeah, it sure is. And you know, like I said, if you shoot in raw, then you've got that ability. I shoot in raw and JPEG, but you know, if I've got an image that's an absolute killer, I will go into the raw file just to see how much, you know, better I can improve the image from the JPEG. I aim to get a JPEG out of my camera, but my best JPEGs, I'll still usually go into the raw file and say, what's here? Because I really love this image.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah. Have a look at that. If you want us to talk about it some more, Phil, we most certainly will. And thank you for attending my workshop when I was up there. It was just the Friday night off-camera flash workshop. So next time I come up to Rocky Mount, we'll do something a little more well, extended for you. hopefully we'll catch up. You keep in touch with some of the good people up there, and because we may be, I may be coming back up soon. So let you know. There's some plans afoot.
Fantastic.
All right, should we move on to the next one?
Yeah. Now, a little bit of background on this. This is an email from a guy called Jim Addy. And Jim has long been a listener to one of my recently terminated podcasts, Sign Language.
Did you terminate Sign Language?
I did.
Oh.
I did, about 2 weeks ago, actually.
Okay, dude.
Yeah, as I explained to the listeners in the final episode of Sign Language, I said, look, you know, this has not been an easy decision to come to, but I've got to the point after 130 episodes. Sorry, let me just backtrack. For those who don't know, because I'm assuming the majority of people listening to Shutters Inc. never listened to Sign Language, Sign Language was a podcast all about audio production, like recording techniques, mixing techniques, editing techniques, a little bit about audio hardware like microphones and mixers and mic preamps, a little bit about software, a little bit about room acoustics. And I said in the final episode, look, after 130 episodes, I feel like I've said pretty much everything that I feel qualified to talk about, and to drag it on any further, I feel, is just going to be a case of podcasting when there's nothing to say. Mm-hmm. And I've always been of the opinion, if you've got nothing to say, then don't podcast. People's time is too valuable.
Mm.
So I said, I'm just pulling the pin on it now, you know, and we'll just let it stand as it has been for 130 episodes as a concise and complete set of work, and not let it, you know, degenerate into a mockery of itself. So anyway, Jim has long been a listener to Sign Language and has contributed some great conversations in Sign Language. But he's also into photography. It's amazing how many audio engineers get into photography. Because I know a couple of other audio engineers here in Sydney who are into photography as well. So anyway, yes. Jim sent me this email, and we got talking about him wanting to photograph water skiers and requiring, you know, copious amounts of artificial light to light up the water skiers.
Mm.
And I probably should have dug out the first email, which I haven't got here. But so this is the second email, which I can't remember the contents of. We'll get to it as I read it. But there was a reason why I put it in here. So hopefully that will become obvious as I read it. Bruce, no, not in the dark ages. I can use Canon's high-speed sync up to a 4,000th of a second. Here's the problem with today's high-speed sync systems with focal plane shutters. The native sync speed, usually a 250th, is the highest shutter speed that the focal plane shutter curtains are both completely open, exposing the full sensor for the flash. Higher shutter speeds are achieved by letting the second curtain chase the first, creating a moving slit. The smaller the slit, the higher the effective shutter speed. Up at 2,000th of a second, only about 20% or so of the sensor is exposed at any instant. If you fire a strobe at that moment, you get your exposure masked by the slit, which makes sense.
Yep.
Strobes' outputs are adjusted for exposure requirements by adjusting the flash duration, not the intensity. So the longest duration flash will also be full power, which is normally a bit over 1,000th of a second in duration. To get high-speed sync to work, the strobe must have a flash duration equal to the time it takes the focal plane shutter curtains to transition over the entire sensor. That only happens at full power, or some modification of it, promoting longer duration flashes. So, whereas below native sync speeds, flash exposure is independent of shutter speed because the flash duration is faster than the shutter, above the native sync speed, the flash exposure is like just any other continuous light source, and exposure is affected by shutter speed, effectively reducing the guide number. So if my native sync is a 250th, if I sync at 4,000th, I've lost four stops of strobe and ambient light.
Yep.
And because his next paragraph is referring to something that I'd said about, you know, your, you know, guide number equals f-stop over, distance over f-stop. Yes, F2 at 20 metres, guide number of 40 would work and light the subject, but we don't ski in the dark. I have full sun behind the skier and need to blow light into the front. My exposure is around a 3,200th of a second at F4 at ISO 200. If I've lost 3.5 stops of strobe intensity by running the shutter speed up, I'm basically shooting blanks as far as the strobe is concerned. So I either need lots more strobe power, which is available only from stuff like Norman 200 units, or I need to collect every bit of light from the strobe and focus it on my subject with some sort of lens. The telephoto position on the strobes isn't nearly enough. I need about 4 stops more light. Attached are 2 shots we did last week, one front lit, one back lit, and significantly overexposed. I overexposed so I could get some detail out of the subject's face, but I completely lost the sparkle and detail of the water. I want full sun backlighting the water spray, yet good light on the subject's face. So far, I haven't found any economical way to do this. This will be an expensive shot gear-wise, and it won't look natural, but that's not the goal. It's a hyper-real wow shot. I've gotten this idea to work at sunset. Well, sort of, but not in high sun. Run the idea past Shelton, see what he says. I'm looking at high power strobes and light focusing systems. So far, that's my best solution other than a camera without a focal plane shutter. Again, the Leica would solve the problem. Leaf shutters expose the entire film or sensor all at once, and the strobe can pop when it's open. There are still limits, but it's about half as bad as a focal plane shutter. By the way, I already tried shadow recovery in Photoshop. The results are only fair and quite limited, even with masks applied. This is a case of light making the difference. Jim Addy. So, your thoughts?
My thoughts are, I can think of a couple of options.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen a lot of water ski photographs. I've never known any of them to use flash.
No,
you know, I and yet I've seen enough detail in them that they A, look real and quite wow, and yet at the same time, you know, they've only used available light. And I mean, people have been taking water skiing photographs for decades now,
yeah.
And with film. So I'm not sure I understand why you feel the need to fill so strongly from the front. I would.
I think it comes back to what he was saying towards the end there, that this is not meant to be a natural looking shot. He's really going for a highly stylized kind of shot. So. Mm-hmm. Where natural light's just not going to cut it.
No, I suppose so. I've just had this really weird idea that he should have a boat running alongside the skier back, just out of frame, with a very powerful flash and a pocket wizard, and a guy holding it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if there's a boat next to the skier,
even two, one on either side.
Yep. Depending on how he wants to light it.
Both firing in from the side.
Yeah, you know, and he shoots, you know, at a 250th because he'll pocket wizard the thing or flash wave or whatever he wants to use. Flash on manual, kaboom, and it's only a few meters away and just out of frame. That could work, but I mean, it's a more convoluted way of getting the shot done. And I don't know if you've got a spare boat and a spare person, but that would be one solution.
I'm sure that if you had a bunch of guys who all shared a love for the same, you know, pastimes, you could probably find a couple of guys who'd be happy to run alongside and hold flashes for you while you got the shot.
Yeah, I think so. I would also shoot at that time of day that makes the shot more... the stronger the contrast you're dealing with, in, you know, the brighter the day, you're going to have issues. Reduce the contrast, and you are going to, you know, by shooting in a, you know, a different kind of day, an overcast day, at a time of day when the sun is a little softer. The other thing is, you want backlighting, so you know it has to be photographed a certain way in a certain direction. There are exposures that are in between. I mean, you don't have to expose for one or the other. Sometimes you can find an exposure that, you know, will slightly overexpose the background, but not so completely underexpose the foreground. In other words, you might overexpose the drops of or the spray coming out from behind the skier, but, you know, maybe expose a little more for the front. There's all sorts of well, what I'd put into inverted commas solutions, but whether or not they, you know, are exactly what you're looking for, I don't know. The only thing I can think of at the moment is because of the guide number rule and the issues that you've raised, all of which are perfectly, you know, correct. I would only suggest that a guy holding a really, really powerful flash in a boat about 5 to 10 feet away from the skier might actually work. Never having done this photograph, never having actually water skied, I really couldn't come up with any other option other than that.
Reduce
the guide number difficulties by reducing the distance from flash to subject.
Yeah.
Mm.
I guess, you know, that's the whole point, is he's looking at spending the money on the strobe gear to shoot from the boat that he's shooting the photograph from. Maybe, you know, the option you've suggested of having another boat or two boats running parallel might be actually a cheaper option.
I think the lighting would be more interesting too.
Mm.
You know, otherwise it's just fill flash from the front, which is...
I guess, you know, it all depends on your artistic vision, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, fill flash from the front is not going to create, you know, highlight and shadow, because the shadow will fall behind. And so... If you had a boat running along, you know, a boat alongside, and that's probably logistically possibly a nightmare. I'm just talking off the top of my head here, but it's probably logistically a nightmare to organize to keep a boat, you know, a certain distance from a skier and a certain, you know, distance in front or whatever. But how many photographs? If you just get that one photograph, you've got it. Yeah. You don't need, you know, as long as you got it right once, then you've got it.
That's it.
You know, maybe it's worth doing. I mean, a Canon 580EX or an SB900, these things are powerful, you know. Their guide numbers are, you know, 50 and 60. So, you know, I you know, in meters at 100 ISO. So at 200 ISO, you know, these things are bam, powerful, fresh set of batteries, and away you go. That's the only thing I can really think of. Get yourself some alien bees and, you know, put them on the boat or something. It's not going to be easy to do. Not impossible, though. If that's unreasonable, if my answer is ridiculous, let me know. But that's anything I can really think of at the moment that will overcome your problem. Either find an exposure that is a balance between the front of the skier and the water behind by getting the right day and the right time of day and the right weather conditions. Or perhaps think of using, you know, a voice-activated light stand with a pocket with it attached on a boat running parallel to the skier, yeah, or just slightly in front and off to an angle.
Keep us informed of how you go, Jim, because I'd like to see the outcome.
Yes.
No matter which way you approach it, we'd like to see what you come up with.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, we got another email from Rockhampton.
Yeah. Wow.
What is it with Rockhampton all of a sudden?
Oh, I've been there a few times. They love me up in Rockhampton. They love me. Shall we read it?
You can read this one.
All right. Hi, boys. We've got Mae West here. Okay.
Well, that's probably a reference to our new email address.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I just like to think she's Mae West.
Okay.
Hi, boys. If I can just say a few words regarding the podcast. Shutters Inc. is the first and only podcast I listen to. Thank you.
Woohoo.
Yeah, so in a way, I have lost my podcast virginity to you both. I know that's probably a scary thought for all of us, but I digress. Until about a week ago, I had never listened to a podcast. During the last week or so, I've downloaded every Shutters Inc. podcast. I need to think what your broadband bill's going to be. I've been listening to them on my way to and from work, and you even come to bed with me. Yet another disturbing thought, she puts in brackets. I think I've listened to about 35 podcasts so far. I've noticed that in the beginning, the podcast lasted about 9 minutes. The last episode, 160, lasted 1 hour and 21 minutes. I remember that in the early podcasts, you were wondering how you're going to find something to talk about each week. There doesn't seem to be any trouble in that area. Maybe it's padded with a bit more crap, crap, giggle, giggle. I'm not complaining, mind you. It's very enjoyable and very addictive. Instead of listening to a couple of radio jerks on my way to work, I now listen to a couple of photography nuts. Shelton, I attended a couple of workshops you held up here in sunny Rockhampton, Queensland. Fantastic, she puts in capitalized letters. When do you think you guys may be up this way again? I missed the workshop on DIY studio lighting on a budget. I don't know if you've already discussed this in a podcast, but I'll certainly have a browse and check it out. If not, could you perhaps cover it basically in a future podcast? By the way, winter up here in Yeppoon has been horrendous. We're averaging 15 degrees at night and 25 degrees during the day. It's been a real struggle. Shut up. We're lucky to get 15 degrees during the day.
Yeah.
Anyway, I haven't had a chance to put any tips into practice yet. I've been going through a bit of the mid-photography crisis lately where I've lost a bit of passion for photography. After listening to the podcast, I find the interest is building again. Thanks for that. I think I'll save up and go on a photography workshop holiday, perhaps a mention on a future podcast about photography holidays and where to find out about them would be helpful. Just a suggestion. We wouldn't want you to run out of material now, would we? Keep up the entertainment and photography tips. I love the whole crap, crap, giggle, giggle thing. I think I will buy one of the t-shirts. Thank you, Kerry. Yes, I know who you are, Kerry, and hello. Nice to have you listening to us, and I would certainly suggest that you keep that up. There are things that we can talk about. In the meantime, I think absolutely you should attend some workshops, and if you've got the budget to maybe go on one of Darren Leal's.
I was just going to say that, yeah.
Darren Leal runs a mean photography tour and takes
his Safari Wise, isn't he?
Yes.
Yes.
Safariwise.com.au. And he just runs, you know, the world's best photo tours. He's such a nice guy, such a great teacher. And, you know, he runs a quality tour. The great thing about them is that you get to see the world. You get to hang out with other photographers. You get great lessons every day. And you return home with photographs that you never thought you'd take. You know, you've seen them in the dreams of other photographers, but you have now got them in the bag. I would certainly suggest that. If you go to creativephotoworkshops.com.au, you'll also notice that we're running some weekends and photography tours. So love to have you on one of those. But just to sort of, you know, talk about just briefly your midlife or mid-photography crisis, it happens to all of us, Kerry. I can be on a, you know, shoot and find myself completely not in the zone, and you have to pull it out. If you know, you have to do your job. That's just being a human. That's just, you know, sometimes life gets in the way, and sometimes you're just not, you know, you're just feeling a bit funky and you can't get it together. So don't despair. I would only suggest that you find means by which you can re-enliven your passion, and you're doing the right thing. That is, you know, by listening to podcasts and, you know, keeping up and looking outside yourself for inspiration, outside your circle, outside your environment for inspiration. Keep doing that. The one thing that I must admit that I learned myself when I came to Rockhampton was that sometimes you need to put old eyes on a new location. New eyes on an old location. Sorry. I need my second cup of coffee, don't I, Bruce?
I'm feeling the same.
you need to put new eyes on an old location. When I came up there to run the two-day wedding photography workshop, you might remember, I think you were there. If not, you asked the photographers who were. We went along the riverside to do wedding photographs. And so many of the photographers said, you know how often I walk along here and I don't see what you're seeing? And then we would take the wedding couple the models into an alleyway next to an old building, into places that they've walked by, parking lots that I found fascinating that they park in and never look at. And we did these photographs that they've never seen before. And that's because I came to town with new eyes. I drove through Rockhampton the day before thinking, wow, this is fantastic. I could use that and do that and do that. And it was new eyes on an old location. I think maybe you need to sometimes drive around the place, look for not so much the building, but the light on the building at certain times of day, and ask yourself, how could I use that light? How could I use exposure? What would I do if I put a person into that very place right now? And you'll find that you will have new eyes on an old location. Rockhampton has just some of the most awesome textures and buildings around. It's fantastic. So don't despair at your environs, and don't think that you have to go to Namibia to get great photographs. You have great opportunities right there along the riverside in Rockhampton. And then once you've, you know, put new eyes on an old location, ring up Darren Leal and ask him how much it costs to go to Namibia. And if you've got the money, do it, because, you know, he runs the world's best photo tours. I know he's asked, well, I have been honored by, you know, by him and led a couple of his tours. And so I know the lengths he goes to organize some of the most incredible things you'll ever photograph. So just a thought.
I would also add, Kerry, try, certainly if you've done, you know, one or two of Shelton's workshops when he's been up there, hopefully you have remained in contact with some of the other people who participated. Get in touch with those people and organize a weekend to get together and just go on a photo walk. You know, even if it is just a daytime thing, and you know, and just pick a subject, you know, like I'm trying to do with the handful of Sydney photographers, you know, and we get together once a month. And just, you know, come up with a topic in advance, you know, some sort of subject matter that you say, okay, this is going to be the topic for our shoot, you know, or the theme of our shoot, and go out with something in mind. You know, I find if you just go out with no idea in your head of what you're going to shoot, you're going to walk around saying there's nothing to shoot. If you come up with some sort of a theme in advance, you at least go out with your eyes open looking for things that fit that theme. And, you know, and I honestly think if you know, the more wacky the theme you come up with, the more you're going to be looking. But I definitely recommend the getting together with other people who are into the same love and, you know, and just going out together, because I've mentioned this on the podcast myself, you know, I feel a bit silly just going out by myself, wandering around taking photos of nothing in particular. But when you're with a bunch of other people who are all doing the same thing, it sort of feels a little bit more comfortable.
And you're motivated by their inspiration.
Absolutely.
You know, you're motivated by something they've seen that you haven't, because their brain works differently.
Yeah.
And you learn from people. I at every workshop, I will learn something from a newcomer. I have no problem with that. That's exactly what I want, because they have new eyes on an old thing. Yeah. You know, I've photographed thousands of people in my life, and you can fall into a pattern of doing so, a pattern of light, a pattern of composition, you know, and a style of shooting. And sometimes a newcomer, new eyes, in other words, will come to a workshop and take a photograph and I go, why didn't I see that? And that will become a new moment of inspiration, and perhaps I will take that, their vision, and build on it. So, you know, yeah, it's birds of a feather. Now, you are, as you say in your email here, under your signature, you do, you know, belong to the Rockhampton Photography Club. Keep that up, but don't just live in that little circle, because, you know, sometimes clubs have a mindset or build a mindset that can also be, quite frankly, stifling. So step outside of that. And look at the work of all sorts of photographers, because you know, in with the internet accessibility that we have these days, there are inspiration sources everywhere. But if you can, you know, come on some more workshops, go on one of Darren Leal's, etc., do as much of that as you possibly can. Now, I understand you have a new idea for a photo walk yourself. Or one has been put to you, Bruce.
Borrowing another theme, yes.
Well, you know, it's all we did.
Yeah, through the week, because we've got meetup number 7 happening tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And Jenny Nagy and I were talking on Facebook through the week, and she said, hey, we should do a film noir shoot. She said, I've got a smoke machine.
Cool.
And I went, okay, great, you know, because I didn't know that any of us had access to a smoke machine, and I certainly didn't. So,
that's not expensive. They're not expensive to buy.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think we bought ours for, I don't know, $80 or something off eBay.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, they're not expensive.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Mm. Yeah, so somewhere in the future, the Sydney Group will be doing a film noir shoot as well.
Fantastic.
Why not?
So. Well, we've been asked now 3 times to run the film noir. We ran it originally. It was very popular.
Yep.
It sold out very, very quickly, our film noir event. We then, because there were people who couldn't make the first one, we ran it a second time. Then there was a lady who couldn't make neither.
And it probably filled up with the same people the second time.
Some came a second time, absolutely. And we had different models, so that was an advantage for them.
Mm-hmm.
Slightly different photographic concepts. And then there was a lady who couldn't make either of them, so she paid us to run it for her, which is what we did on Wednesday night. And it was, it's very cool. I love the genre, and I love using that kind of light, or as we should say, that kind of not light.
Yeah.
You know, film noir, and this was something that we had to teach all of those who attended. Film noir is not about what you light. It's about what you don't light.
Hmm.
And it's about, as I say to the people who've come to this particular event, this workshop, don't be afraid of the dark. We are so used to filling the frame with the subject, getting in close, et cetera, et cetera. But film noir is all about lots of darkness and then a rim lid or very, heavily lit, partially lit subject within that darkness. And it is so powerful. If you have a look at my blog, I've got, two or three sort of film noir references up there from the events that we've run. And in each case, you have to have a lot of darkness so that which is lit stands out. Some of the people who at the workshop took their photographs and they came up to show me had zoomed right in on the faces and, thought, we'll get close, the old Robert Capa rule.
Yeah.
But this breaks the Robert Capa rule. You need to pull away because you've got a setting in a dark, contrasty area, context, and the context needs to be seen.
I just want to jump in.
Yeah.
And say, Phil Austin, if you're still listening, you were talking about dynamic range. This is the absolute extreme of dynamic range.
Yeah.
You know, where we're talking about, having detail in shadows right through to detail in highlights. Film noir is all about reducing that.
Yes.
And almost breaking it down to just dark bits and light bits.
Yes. Yes. It's if there was a lot of dynamic range in film and a lot of, and a lot of dynamic range in the sensors that we, like the same dynamic range as the human eye, we wouldn't be able to do film noir.
No.
It's about exposing for the highlights and allowing the dark to be dark. It's a fascinating genre. If you want to go into it in greater detail, we certainly can. But all I would say, Bruce, is tell everybody at this particular event not to be afraid of the dark. If you're going to set up a film noir, you have to stand back, you have to shoot with medium focal length, or at least allow a lot of space, anything from medium focal length to wide angle, and expose for the highlights. Rim light a lot. Make sure that you don't light too much. If you can, use one light. We use constant lighting on our workshops. We have long extension cords that we run through the convent out to the light that, we use the archways outside, the colonnades, et cetera, et cetera. So you might need to have some kind of portable lighting that's bright and yet battery driven.
Right.
I don't think it's the kind of thing you can do with flash. You could, but it's very hard. It's a different kind of light.
It'd be hard to set up, I would imagine, because you can't see it in advance.
Yes, you can't. And the other thing that you've got to do is set your camera to monochrome.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you want to shoot in RAW and JPEG, so you've got the color version there, absolutely. That's what I do. And then, if it's a great shot, I might go into the RAW and, work it. However, to be honest with you, most of the images that the people produced at this workshop, monochrome, that they put up were straight out of camera.
Nice.
And that's because we'd metered for it, set it up, and straight out of camera, this monochrome image came out, and most people were happy with that. Glyn, my business partner in Creative Photo Workshops, he was saying to a customer the other night, who when we were running the third event, he said, the frustrating thing for me, he says, because I love working my images, he says, is that I'm looking at the picture on the screen straight out of my camera, and there's nothing I can do to it. And that's a great thing.
Yeah.
Because he's metered for the highlights. And the thing about that is it can be pitch black. You can be outside in the middle of the night and you can still get a 60th of a second at 2.8, at 100 or 200 ISO.
Yeah.
It's very manageable, provided you've got bright enough lights. So find a battery-driven light source that's powerful enough. You'll be just fine. Or if you've got a fog machine, you're probably going to need maybe a little portable generator or something.
Yep.
That's not out of the question either.
Yep.
A couple of trolleys and away you go.
Now, I've got to ask, was the pistol a a replica, or was that one of those shonky police officers that listens to our podcast?
It's not a bad looking little. It's a cheap little bit of plastic, to be quite honest with you.
Right. Okay.
You know, but yeah, because sometimes you do get, you know, close-up shots or whatever. Yeah, if you have to have the right props. I went to a vintage or a retro clothing store.
Yep.
To buy clothing, it cost me about $150 for the trench coat, the fur coat, and the dress.
Yep.
Because it is authentic, you know, from the 40s.
Yep.
And you need a fedora. You need a guy in a suit and tie, trench coat, fedora hat, black shoes.
Yep.
You need a woman in, you know, 40s makeup.
Yep.
40s hair. And, you know, 40s clothing.
Yep.
You know, if you don't have that, if it's, you know, half-baked, it's not going to work. It has to look good. It has to look the part. So, you know, organize yourself a makeup artist and a hairstylist.
Yep.
You might need to throw, you know, each person might need to throw some money at this. But you'll get models who are really, really happy to do it. Because, you know, nobody shoots like this. And it's a great shot to have of yourself. You know, Tyson, our model, has done it twice now because he loves it. The couple we had on the second event were begging us to be the models because they loved the whole idea, and they came in and did it. So it's a really cool shoot. I'd love to see what you come up with, especially with the architecture in and around, you know, Sydney and suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be able to pull this off absolutely brilliantly. You'll just need, you know, a light source, maybe with a generator.
Yeah,
need a generator for the fog machine.
Yes.
And to make sure that the light lights up the fog. If you're going to use fog,
right,
behind it.
Yep.
So that it, you know, it creates that atmosphere, and it and then you put the person in front of it to silhouette the person.
Yep.
You know, if you have a look at the photographs that we've done, we battled like crazy with breezes and wind, and, you know, also to get the fog to go fall in the right place. So you're going to need an area that's relatively sheltered from wind, that you can have a little bit of control over where the fog sits.
Right.
And it only sits for about 30 seconds, and then you've got to refill it again. So
right.
Where you put your lights, then the fog in front of that, and the subject in front of that, and you've got a powerful noir image. Remember that the word noir means, well, I think it means black, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And so you have to have, you know, darkness. Don't be afraid of the dark, and tell the people that you're with on this walk not to be afraid of the dark. There has to be darkness in the image for the highlights to stand out. When you've got a, imagine a black piece of cardboard and a white dot that's just a, you know, an inch across. What is that? That's a picture of a white dot. It's not a, you know, that's what film noir is. It doesn't matter how much is lit. It's that which is lit will stand out of the darkness, and that's the powerful part of it. So don't get too close, and allow a lot of darkness in the image so that it does have, well, the film noir or film black effect. Have a look at film noir images on the internet. Go to have a look at, watch some old classic film noir movies and get the feel for it. And it's I love that style of shooting. Absolutely love it.
There's also a decent Wikipedia article on film noir, which I will put a link to in the show notes. So if you want to read up all about it, it'll be there.
Yep.
Cool. All right. So did you want to wrap it up?
I've got a wedding to shoot. So, yeah, it's not an hour and 20 minutes this time.
It's not?
Yeah. I've got to get into my shirt and my tie because, you know, we dress up for weddings. Can't go there in your old, you know, despite the stories I still hear about how people dress for weddings when they go to photograph them. I don't. So, you know, I dress up good.
Excellent.
And, so I've got to get myself, you know, spivved up and then get out of here.
Fantastic. Well, you have an enjoyable shoot.
Thanks, mate. It's a Melbourne winter day, so going to be working it today.
All right. Well, have fun, and we will talk to you next week.
Good on you, mate. Thanks.
And remember, if you want to send us emails, please do theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com, and we will both get the email, and we look forward to hearing all your emails as they come in.
Keep us posted.
Excellent. All right, mate. Talk to you next week.
Good on you, mate. See you soon.
Bye.
This has been another AudioToYou.com podcast. For previous episodes, check out
ShuttersIncPodcast.com.
Please send questions, comments, or feedback to studio@AudioToYou.com.